Isaiah chapter 5, verse 1. Now will I sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. My well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill, and he fenced it and gathered out the stones thereof and planted it with the choicest vine and built a tower in the midst of it, and also made a wine press therein. And he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard, what could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. And now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up, and rake down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down. And I will lay it waste, it shall not be pruned nor digged, but there shall come to briars and thorn. I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plant. And he looked for judgment, but behold oppression, for righteousness, but behold a cry. Chapter 6, verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphim. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken from the tongs from afar, from off the altar. The Lord will bless the reading of his word.
Thank you very much. Well, at this time of the year, Isaiah is often referred to at least one verse in chapter 7 and two verses in chapter 9. The verse in chapter 7 was given to as a sign by the Lord unto the house of David, the royal line. And said the Lord unto the house of David, I will give you a sign, because Isaiah had been sent unto Ahaz, king of Judah, with this invitation from God, to ask of God a sign, whether in the depths below or whether in the heights above. He could ask him a sign which would confirm to Ahaz the promise that God made and the statement God made in the earlier verses of the chapter, from verse 10 down to this verse 14. But Ahaz refused to ask God a sign. And I want to consider this afternoon, how was it that the condition of the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the men of Judah was such so that when God came to offer Ahaz a sign, he refused to ask God a sign? How did those conditions in the nation, or at least in Judah, how did those conditions arise? The answer to that is found in chapter 5. Let me say before we go any further that from chapter 5 to chapter 12, we have a very, very interesting section of this prophet Isaiah. It divides into three units. Chapters 5 and 6, they form unit number 1. And chapter 7, down to verse 7 of chapter 9, we have unit number 2. And then from verse 8 of chapter 9 to chapter 12, we have unit number 3. So this very important section of the book of Isaiah falls into these three units. And it's very interesting when you consider at least the second and the third unit, that in those two units we have brought before us, in chapter 7, the virgin son. In chapter 9, the eternal son. In chapter 11, David's son. So you see, in these sections of Isaiah, from chapter 5 to chapter 12, we have these important truths. God giving a sign, that's chapter 7. And then we have the eternal son, that's chapter 9. And then, of course, we have the manifestation of God's king in chapter 11. Very interesting, just let me make this point, that this section begins in chapter 5 with a song. And chapter 12 that ends the section also ends with a song. But those two songs are so different. In chapter 5, as we're going to consider in a moment, it is the song of the vineyard. It's called that, the song of the vineyard. When you come to chapter 12, it's the song of the wells of salvation. So when you put these two songs together, this is what you see. The first song is to do with Israel's past history. The second song in chapter 12 has to do with Israel in the future. So it's Israel in the past, chapter 5, Israel in the future, chapter 12. That's just an interesting point I want to make as we go through. What I want to do this afternoon is to look at chapter 5, and those few verses that we've read only form part of the chapter. We have there how it was the condition of Judah actually deteriorated into what something so different to what God had actually planted. And so it's God dealing with a people, the people of Judah. The opening verse of chapter 6 is God dealing with an individual. For the man whom God is going to send with this sign unto the house of David is a man that must be prepared. And so we find in chapter 6 the preparation of Isaiah the prophet in order that he might serve God in this fashion. And so we'll see in chapter 6, if we get that far, of course, that we find that the man who's going to serve God, first of all, must have a vision of the Lord. And secondly, hear the voice of the Lord. And that's what you have in those verses read to us from chapter 6. The vision was in the year that King Uzziah died. The voice, then I heard the voice saying, whom shall we send? Who will go for us? And so we find that in that chapter, chapter 6, this interesting chapter that actually sets before us the preparation of Isaiah for his prophetic ministry that began, of course, in chapter 7 when he brought the sign from God unto the house of David. But what we have in chapter 5 is the condition of the people of Judah. And so we find in this chapter, it all begins with the song. And the prophet Isaiah is a singer. He says, I will sing of my well-beloved. That would be better read like this. I will sing for my well-beloved. Then he says, I will sing of my well-beloved. So here we have a song that was going to be sung by the prophet for his well-beloved. And that song would be the song of his well-beloved, giving to us the substance of the song itself. It's very interesting, this term, well-beloved. See, in the Hebrew Bible of the Old Testament, of course, this term beloved is the only time used outside of the Song of Solomon. In the Song of Solomon, the word beloved is used again and again. It's that wonderful story of the Shulamite and her beloved. This is the only occasion outside of the Song of Songs where you have this title referred to. It says, Isaiah, I will sing for my well-beloved. That's what Jehovah meant to Isaiah the prophet. And that in stark contrast to what he meant to the people of Judah. And he says this, I will sing for my well-beloved the song of my well-beloved. And so we find from this point, we're going to have the song. And what does the song consist of? Well, the song consists, of course, of what God has done in the past. He planted a vineyard. And in that vineyard, he actually planted the choicest vine. And from that choicest vine, he looked for gorgeous fruit of good quality. That's what God did. That's what the song was all about. The song of the vineyard. How that God had a vineyard. And having prepared the vineyard, he planted in it the goodliest of vines, that it might bring forth fruit unto him. We find that this vine of Isaiah chapter 5 is described for us in Jeremiah chapter 2 as a noble vine. It's a vine of particular character. But of course, you will remember that when we're talking about the vineyard, then that has to do with Israel. When the Lord in Matthew's gospel, in relation to the parable of the sower, the field he interprets as the world. So in chapter 5 of Isaiah, we're not thinking about the world, we're thinking about Israel as the vineyard. And yet within that vineyard of Israel, God planted a choice vine. And that choice vine, as we see here to go down through these few verses, is actually the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the men of Judah. Now we find that the song ends in verse 2. There's a song. From verse 3 down to verse 7, we now have the Lord speaking directly unto the men of Judah. And so having sung the song and established what God had done, but when did God have this vineyard? Well, it's Psalm number 80, which is very a very good comment upon this particular passage in Isaiah chapter 5. It says Psalm number 80, he called this vine out of Egypt. So what we have here is God's vineyard began when he redeemed a people out of Egypt, redeemed by blood in chapter 12, and redeemed by power in chapter 14. And so the vineyard was God's redeemed people, Israel. And the psalmist in Psalm 80 takes us right back to Egypt. And so we find here we have Israel in the past, called by God out of Egypt, delivered and redeemed by blood, that he might have a vineyard in this world. And Israel was God's vineyard. And within Israel, in that vineyard, he actually planted a choice vine. Now, the men of Judah, whom the Lord will speak directly, did not realize that they were the choice vine at that point. But says the prophet concerning this vineyard, that God prepared it and God planted it with this one purpose in view, that it might produce fruit, and that for his pleasure. Now, when we come to the end of the song at verse 2, we now have Jehovah speaking directly unto the men of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem. It's a remarkable picture, really. And it would be good to stand in the shoes of the men of Judah at this point. Because you see, what we have now from verse 3, and that down to at least verse 6, Jehovah is going to speak directly to them. So what was the song in verse 1 and 2? Now we see has a judicial character about it. From what God does in verse number 3, he invites the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the men of Judah to act as judges. He said, I want to judge betwixt me and my vineyard. And after he said, when I actually prepared that vineyard for this choice vine, he said, I took out all the stones. For you see, I fenced it round. In order to fence round this particular vineyard, this parcel of ground, he had to dig. and dig. And dig till all the rocks, the big stones were out. And then he cleared all the surface of all the small stones. And so he was left with what he called a very fruitful hill, a piece of land. So it was extremely fruitful, with all the depths the vine would need for its roots, for every stone had been removed. No thorns or no briars were left in it. And then God did this. He fenced it. He actually built a wall round this vineyard. And then on top of the wall, he planted a hedge, a thorn hedge. And then he said this. He then, having planted in this vineyard this goodly, the goodliest of vines, he set up a tower. For at the time of fruit, then they would need a watchman to make sure that robbers did not come in and take all the choice fruit from the vine. And then says the Lord, talking to the people direct, he said, I made a wine press. That is, he made a stone chamber. From that stone chamber, there was a channel that led to a vat, so that when the harvest, when the grapes were all harvested, they would be put into this chamber, and then they would be trodden underfoot, and all the juice of the grapes would flow down the channel into the vat. And so God was looking for, in this vineyard, from this choice vine, that which would be goodly fruit that would produce the best of wines. Now he says, having told them what he had done, and remember, the men of Judah are sitting now in a sort of a law court, for the songbook has given place to a law court. And they sit in the law court listening to the case. Here is Jehovah's case. And so we find, what could I have done more than I've not done? I've done everything in order to have a vine that will produce the best of fruit. And so he then says unto these that sit in his judge of the case, judging between Jehovah and his vineyard, he says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Not what he's done, what he's going to do. He's going to break down, he's going to take off the hedge, he's going to break down the walls, and he's going to open up the vineyard so that the beast of the field can come in and trod it down underfoot. So that now be open to every enemy and would altogether be crushed. And so what God is saying directly unto these men of Judah, this is what I'm going to do with this choice vine that produced only wild grapes. For after all that God had done in preparation for this choice vine, it only produced wild grapes. And so we find, as the men of Judah listen, they would be saying, when God said, what more could I have done? What else did I not do? It's a rhetorical question, of course. No doubt the men of Judah would be nodding their heads, you've done all you could do. And what you've done is what that choice vine deserved. It deserved now for the walls to be broken down, and the hedge removed, and the watchtower removed. It deserved to be trodden down underfoot, because as they understood the case, they were thinking of the 10 tribes, northern Israel. Those 10 tribes would set up their own capital, their own altar, their own priesthood, their own form of worship. And so the people of Judah, thinking that this story was all about Israel, the northern kingdom, agreed with God. He couldn't have done more. And what he was about to do, they deserved. And so we find, of course, in 721 BC, the 10 tribes were taken away captive into Assyria, and they've never yet been recovered. So we find now, having told the story and got the men of Judah listening in, and we find that having listened to the story, they actually came to their own conclusion. And that, of course, has been done many a time with a story. The writer so told the story as to get the interest of the audience or the readership, so they come to a wrong conclusion. That's just what actually happened here. But after all, it was like Nathan. When he went to David, he went to David with a story. He talked about a rich man and a poor man. He talked about a rich man with many flocks, a poor man with just one ewe lamb, which was to him like a daughter he held in his bosom. But when that rich man had a visitor, instead of taking from his own flocks, he went and wrenched out of the bosom of the poor man his one ewe lamb, that he might make a feast for the strangers that come through. And so, telling the story, as Nathan did, David came to a wrong conclusion. And in the wrong conclusion, it was because he got very angry. What was he got very hot in the collar. As he listened to that story that Nathan told, he said, the man that did this, he shall be killed. And before he's killed, he will restore that one lamb fourfold. You see, David came to a wrong conclusion. And in coming to the wrong conclusion, he went far beyond the law of God. The law of God said if a sheep was stolen, it had to be restored fourfold, but not that there should be anyone killed. And so David, having come to a wrong conclusion, Nathan turned to him and said, thou art the man. That's just what happens here in verse 7. Now, the courtroom scene is finished. The story has been told, and the men of Judah have come to the wrong conclusion. They thought the story was all about Israel. Now, says the prophet Isaiah, in the language of Nathan, to these men of Judah, thou art the man. The choice fine was Judah. And after all that God had done for Judah, it only brought forth wild grapes. You see, what the prophet is saying in relation to Judah is this. You see, God found in the nation of Judah that fruit which was described as wild grapes. And there were six bunches of wild grapes produced on this choice vine, the people of Judah. Those six bunches of wild grapes are now actually enlarged upon from verse number 8 down to verse number 25 of the chapter. And each of those bunches of wild grapes referred to by God when he challenged the men of Judah to come to a conclusion as to who was right, who was wrong. You see, says the prophet from verse 8 to verse 25, he says, woe, and he repeats it six times. There's more than one Hebrew word that's translated woe. Actually, Isaiah uses the word 21 times throughout this book. Jeremiah only uses it 8 times. But here in this chapter, the word that Isaiah uses is a word that actually is a lamentation. And so we find that the prophet is making a lamentation over the men of Judah, because they were the ones who had only brought forth wild grapes, six bunches of wild grapes. And so whereas God looked for righteousness, he did not find it. We find that these wild grapes was altogether the fruit of a people that had departed from the Lord. So when you come to the closing lines of verse 24, what have they done? They've cast away the law of the Lord and the word of the Holy One of Israel. Here were a people so privileged by God, planted in the best possible part of the land to bring forth fruit for him. But that very people, the southern king of Israel, that is the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the men of Judah, they, having cast away the law of the Lord and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel, they only produced wild grapes and six bunches of them. And so we find the judgment of God is stated in the close of this, of the explanation of the psalm, that God is going to deal with them. He's going to take away all the protection he put around them. And they also will be taken away captive. So within this little section from verse 1 to verse 7, God is saying, Israel will be taken captive by the Assyrian. But the people of Judah, they'll go into captivity in Babylon. And so we find this was the reason why. When Isaiah the prophet was sent unto the house of Judah, unto Ahaz as the king, saying, ask of thee a sign, whether in the depths beneath or the heights above. And he said, I will not ask a sign of the Lord. I will not tempt the Lord my God. You see, that very impious king who'd led the people away from God, he actually had already arranged, having plundered the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem, and he's trying to buy the help of the superpower of that day, the Assyrian, that the Assyrian might come and help him against these two kings. And there's Rezin and Pekah, the kings of Syria and the kings of, and the king of Israel. And they had actually confederated together, and they'd marched down to Jerusalem with the intention of taking Ahaz off the throne and then setting up in his place a puppet king so that they could use the military might of these three forces now in order to attack the Assyrian, the superpower of the day. And as a result of this confederation of the king of Israel and the king of Israel, the people in Judah were trembling, just like the trees of the wood when the wind blows, and they were afraid. It was in this situation that Isaiah the prophet was sent by God to offer to Ahaz the king a sign. For God said, those two smoking firebrands, they won't last. They'll not accomplish their purpose. And you asking me a sign to confirm that what I say is true. They will not take Jerusalem. They will not fulfill their purpose. They will not accomplish their intention. But the impious king, Ahaz, refused to ask for a sign from God that his word was true, because he'd already put all his hopes and all his trust in the Assyrian, the superpower. And so you can see that when the prophet saw that he refused the invitation by God, now God directs him to turn to the house of David. And it was to the house of David, the royal line, that the sign was given, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and his name should be called Emmanuel. So the child born in Isaiah chapter 9 verse 6 is the virgin's son. And the virgin's son is the son given, the eternal son of God. And the eternal son of God is destined by God actually to be manifest in this world and to reign in this world and to administrate the whole kingdom of God in that millennial age, to administer that kingdom in righteousness. And so we find in chapter 11, we have the preparation of the one who was to administer the kingdom of God and will do, for that chapter looks on to that millennial age when the Lord Jesus Christ will reign as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But you see, in these two chapters, 5 and 6, they form, as it were, an introduction to these great prophetic chapters, 7, 9 and 11. But the man who was to be God's mouthpiece, the song singer, and the man who would speak and bring the sign unto Israel was none other than Isaiah, who in the year that King Uzziah died, he saw also the Lord high and lifted up, sitting upon a throne, His train filled the temple, and the whole house was filled with smoke. And what smoke? Well, we find linked with the throne in the beginning of chapter 6 is the altar. And from that altar will be taken a coal of fire, and the smoke of the altar filled the house of the temple. And we find that Isaiah is prepared now, had a vision of the Lord in glory. And that brought him to say, woe is me. A different word to verse to chapter 5. Woe is me. I am undone. I'm a man of unclean lips. I dwell among a people of unclean lips. And so the seraphim came. And with that call of fire, he said, thine iniquity is taken away. Thy sin and thy mouth is purged. And from that standpoint, when the voice from heaven was heard, who will go for us? Whom shall we send? Isaiah said, I will go. Send me. And that was the man who was sent by God. A man who had a vision, a personal vision of the glory of Christ, the pre-incarnate Christ, and who was sent by God. It's an interesting section of this very interesting book, the book of Isaiah. But because it's Christmas, and Isaiah 7 and Isaiah 9 will be no doubt referred to during these incoming days, it's good just to get the whole picture. We trust now that God will bless his word to us. And thank you for listening once more.